The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Hey, this is Scott. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We got a great program lined up.
We're going to talk about the new investment scams you should be aware of, the things that haven't quite hit the market yet, but you're going to see them soon.
Absolutely. We also have a CPA join us, talk about some things in taxes to pay attention to, and we're going to talk about some new things to look at in retirement. So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us, both myself and my co-host here, Pat. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. Got a great program lined up as usual.
Yes, we do.
Tons of different topics to discuss. And
wake the kids, call the neighbors.
Anyway, we've got a good show to kick things off.
There's a couple things I want to talk
before,
about.
And before we get to the meat of the matter, you returned from Costa Rica.
I did.
And you started telling me a tie into financial
matter. Yeah. So I have a 20-year-old son that is fluent in Spanish and has traveled in Spain to study, and he's on his way to Ecuador, but he's been to Colombia.
Of course. Oh, my gosh.
What?
So,
huh? Yeah.
It's quite a nice life.
It's good to be my kid. So we were leaving Costa Rica, and we were at...
you took a family trip.
We took a family trip. Vacation. We had a beautiful time. Really, really beautiful, active.
We won't talk too much about Pat's vacation.
Okay. Anyway, I have four kids from the age of 15 to 20. They're pretty active.
I think Costa Rica is a great place. It's actually, you can do it much less expensive than Hawaii.
Yes.
It's a lot like Hawaii as far as the tropical stuff goes, but you have all the wildlife too.
So, yeah, we went river rafting.
And rice and beans.
Bicycle riding, and we ate rice and beans, and then rice and beans, and rice and beans. On the quesada is what they call it, their traditional meal. We went kayaking and hiking. Okay, we had a great time. So, but we were leaving the country, and we were at the airport, and we were at one of these places. I don't know what we were having, sandwiches. Oh, it was a Quiznos.
Rice and beans.
It was a Quiznos because we were tired of the rice and beans. And the person in front of us, they had a, you know, the equivalent of a $10 bill. And the guy at the cash register is, you know, examining it really closely. And then he's like, no, this is counterfeit. And I said, that's weird. And my son says, no, it's not weird at all. He said, it's a typical scam. In many of these third world countries is that if you go to a small shop or a dishonest vendor and you pay with the equivalent of, you know, $20 or $30 and they give you change, oftentimes they'll give you counterfeit.
How would you know?
And how would you know? You won't know until you actually
I would have
go.
No concept. It's hard enough to figure it out even when it's not counterfeit.
And that's what, so I said, how do you know that? He says, oh, it happened to me, Dad. And when I was in Colombia, he went to Colombia for some reason. He said, I got scammed. Same scam.
So you wouldn't expect someone to get scammed in Colombia. That's weird. I always think of such, you know, high standards there and everything.
So I just thought
such
it was
a great running economy and all that. I just thought it was.
I said, why would they such small bills? He said, these things are so obviously phony. There, but the tourists can't tell the difference. So there was the tip. And so if you're going to travel to a foreign country, spend a couple minutes to familiarize yourself with the currency or stay away from the little side street shops that sell all the stuff.
Well, it might happen at them.
But we had what we did? So my son, he's fluent in Spanish and he likes the culture. So when we were in the biggest city in Costa Rica, he said, we're going to take a public bus. So we get on this public bus, and we got to see Costa Rica. Where we got off where the tourists don't go. And anyway, I was glad he was with me, or I wouldn't have done it alone.
Well, thank you for sharing your travel experiences with Mr. McLean. Very nice.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. I'm glad you had a good time in Costa Rica. But it's funny because you're talking about how being careful of currency. And Pat and I were, before the show, we often get together and we'll I mean, throughout the week, we're always looking for interesting articles to bring to you, things that you may not have seen. And we both had read this similar article on, it's really, we both read it and thought the same thing.
Identical.
Here comes the next wave of scams.
Yeah. Here's the one. And you're not going to see the scams come out for 2 years. It takes the scammers a little while to recognize it and then put the plan
in place. There's some viable companies in the same space as well, but that's usually when there's some. But this happens to be in the area of litigation funding.
And litigation funding isn't new.
Nope.
It's been around for a long, long time. In fact, some private equity firms do litigation funding where they will actually say, we're going to underwrite this class action. And so a law firm will say, we need, $1 million to go after this class action. And in return, you will get your $1 million plus a percentage
of the take.
And that way it moves the risk off the attorneys. And it moves it into private equity has done this historically or very, very wealthy.
And you can
people.
Understand if you are a litigation attorney and a trial lawyer of some sort, and you've got a huge case or it's a class action case and you're thinking, I'm going to spend 4 years on this.
And millions of dollars.
And we got to hire all these independent experts. Yeah. And so you can understand why it makes sense from their standpoint. You can understand why it makes sense from an investment standpoint.
Because the returns can be very, very good.
What one would think you'd really need to understand the law pretty well. I mean, I would think a wealthy attorney would have the best opportunity to do litigation funding because they could read a case, they can familiarize themselves, they understand the law enough, then they can do some sort of risk, right?
And that's why private equity has been attracted to it, is because they typically have analysts on staff. Private equity will have, they'll manage a portfolio of $500 million or $1 billion, and it's private equity, and they do it for pension funds or very wealthy families.
And if they're going to specialize in this area, they'll probably have a couple attorneys on staff
that analyze these cases and say, this one's got a better than average choice chance of actually paying off.
But we are now seeing some companies that are popping up that are going to allow essentially everyday investors to invest in litigation funding.
Well, and they say everyday investors, but they're accredited investors. And what an accredited investor is if you've had income of $200,000 or more for the past 2 years, or you have $1 million in assets outside your primary residence.
Okay. Well, you can have a retiree with $1 million in savings. That is not exactly wealthy. Nor are they
sophisticated
necessarily. Yeah. Accredited.
But when you do an accredited investor, no one checks you out. You say you're an accredited investor.
I remember talking to somebody years ago. They said they invested in this business that someone was raising money for something. And I said, I thought that was, isn't it limited to accredited investors? I kind of knew this guy was not a $200,000 a year. And so I just said I was.
Yeah. And that's what happens, is it's self-reporting. So here's where the scam will take place. The scammers will start.
Not only will they be scamming, Pat, I just think that you're also going to get, people are going to, look, it's a challenging market right now, right? We understand.
Yeah, it's
when
hard.
When there's $12 to $13 trillion of debt investment in the globe at negative interest rates. That's where we're sitting right now, right?
And the 10-year treasury in the U.S. is paying 1.5%, roughly. You invest your money for 10 years, you take $100,000, and you give it to the government for 10 years, and they're going to pay you approximately $1,500 a year.
I was on the bank today, my online bank thing, and I just noticed on the side it said interest to date, year to date. It was like, and I keep kind of a large balance in my checking account, but it's an interesting, it was like,
something like pennies.
Yeah, $20 or something. Yeah. So nothing, right? So that's the environment we're all in.
So people are looking for alternatives. And
doesn't this sound like a good one?
It sounds great. You can make 20, 30, 40% on your money.
Class action case of some sort. It's going to be a great class action against a medical device company, against a drug manufacturer, against a utility company. You could just... you can already imagine the stories that are going to be there.
And they're going after cases that typically are a million plus, but they're taking money from small investors. And the scammers will actually start touting their returns on specific cases and will start raising money. And the problem with it is so murky, unregulated. This reminds me of the viaticals of old.
I mean, here at Hanson McLean, I can't tell you how many things we've fielded over the years of clients coming to us with ideas from payphone things. I mean,
I forgot about that guy.
The trusts that are designed only for the rock, like how the Rockefellers did. I mean, 25 years in this industry.
Factoring. Remember the factoring scam that was going around? Factoring. Were
those government receivables?
Government receivables. Yeah.
We've seen it all, right? Actually, we haven't seen it all because things keep popping up like we're beginning to see.
But you're going
to
see this. You'll see this. So when someone approaches you about investing in these trial.
But now there's also with this new, what was that act that got?
It allows for it.
Allows for small unaccredited investors if they're under $1 million or something like that.
Yeah.
They're under whatever the funding, I forget the exact. It's one of those things that you got to just watch out for. But we're seeing it. You're going to see pitches on this sort of thing, some litigation funding. There's already this private lending.
Yeah,
we're starting to see some cracks there.
Where you could lend, you know, $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 to someone you don't know.
So this is somebody that instead of going to the bank and borrowing money or getting a credit card
and borrow money, that you could get this incredible 15 to 20% annual return by lending it over this internet to someone you don't know, which the first question you would ask yourself is, if I was lending it to someone I didn't know, why can't they borrow it from a large institution? Why do they have to come to me? So yeah. They're not my family. Anyway, be careful. You're going to see these. They're going to come out as different names. They're going to come out as trial funding or settlement funding.
And actually, there's nothing wrong in and of itself of that business.
It leads itself to scams.
And you're not always going to have a positive experience or a positive rate of return. It can be extremely risky, so you need to watch for that. We got to take a quick break in a moment. If you'd like to join the program, we will take calls later. Hanson McLean, to be part of Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Of the longest running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us on this weekend as summer is winding down. Kids are heading back to school.
Not a moment too soon.
It's like earlier and earlier.
Yeah, not early enough.
Haven't you noticed though? I mean, it seems like.
And mine are all staggered out. So I have two in college and two in high school and. But
my youngest heads off this next week.
Yeah, so you'll be an empty nester.
Yes.
How's that feel?
It's odd.
I can't even imagine.
It's really bittersweet. We had to pencil in a family day
because they're teenagers and they're
20 and 18. Yeah, just so the four of us can be together, and it's like we're together. It's like the first day all we had like one day all summer, and the next morning. I had taken off to work, and I talked to my wife, and she said she was eating her oatmeal, and she said I just started bawling.
She started crying.
Yeah, she said, I know part of it's good. It's just a new season of life, and sorry, I don't mean to out you there, Valerie.
That's okay.
Is it okay?
It's all right to
that
show.
That she's human, that I...
Yeah, to show emotion.
Married?
It's okay to show emotion.
It's all right.
Yeah. Well, you won't see anyway. Me doing it, but...
No. Tough guy. But I am looking forward to actually had dinner with a couple other couples, that exact same situation, a girl and a boy, and their youngest boy is going up to school. And we're going to have like the empty nesters dinner once a month where we can.
That's what you think. You'll be tired of these people after 2 months.
I hope not. They're good friends for a long time.
Yeah, well, that'll change.
Okay.
Anyway.
It's like, you know what's the nice thing about the studio? it's like a sauna in here today. So
oh, no.
I feel like I'm at a spa at the same time I'm doing the radio show. So however we get the air turned down in here, it is like a
It's part of the austerity measures that were taking place here at Hanson McLean.
Is that right?
Yes.
Is that what we're doing?
The austerity
measures. Anyway, we've got a great guest. If I could, where's the my
Which
mouth?
By the way, you know, it's interesting because my wife pays attention to that thermostat. In fact, we're going to talk about it later on the show. Five things that prove rich people are cheap. Not that we're rich, but that we're certainly cheap. We are certainly cheap. But at home, you know, we keep like 80 degrees, but we go to a hotel when it's
80. Is that the lowest your wife will let you?
There is a constant battle in that household between that thermostat.
Between the two of you guys?
Yes, yes. But which I normally lose. But when we go to stay at a hotel, as we did in Costa Rica, stay in a hotel, I'm freezing. She's got it down to 65 degrees. In the middle of the night one night, I went into the bathroom and took the towels.
Because you couldn't have, there's no other blanket?
There was no other blanket. I took the towels and I put them on the bed.
All right, we're getting signals. Look at these people.
Oh, we've got a guess. We've got a guess.
We have great guests. Matter of fact, Chris Mapes is a CPA. She's done a lot of work with Barbara Healy, who's one of our phenomenal advisors. And Barbara's always spoke highly of Chris and the great job Chris has done with her clients. And so we thought we'd have a segment talking about some tax stuff. And so Barbara said, oh, you got to have Chris on because Chris is a fantastic accountant. So Chris, welcome to Hanson McLean. Thanks for joining us. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
We are fantastic. Sorry that we rambled on about Pat's wife keeping the house too warm, but... So you are, how long have you been practicing tax work and CPA stuff and all that?
About 26 years now.
All right, long time then.
You've seen a couple changes.
Oh my gosh.
Just a few.
A couple changes.
Yeah.
It's constant. It is constant and more complex every year. Would you not agree?
I would completely agree.
Individuals, small businesses, both? Is that what you do?
Yes, I do both. Mm-hmm.
A little
bit of trust work.
Chris, what are some of the common mistakes that you see the typical taxpayer making that you see?
A big one that I see is withholdings. People don't adjust their withholdings annually, or they don't pay their estimated taxes, or they don't pay the correct amount of estimated taxes. And this leaves them open to either penalties and interest if they are under withheld, and maybe even by April 15th, they can't even pay the entire balance due because
they haven't saved the money.
Exactly. They spent it all. Or if they over withhold, then, wow, the government has their money for 12 months or for 6 months interest-free.
What percentage of people do you... Because I've talked to people over the years, and they say, well, that's how we save our vacation money, right?
Crazy?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Actually, with interest rates becoming zero, that it doesn't really make as much difference as it used to, but it certainly used to make a big difference, and still it's kind of a bizarre concept. Why would you want to give the government money before you actually have to? But how common is that? How often do you argue with people and they win?
Well, you know, it's always up to them. I can only give them the advice. Whether they take it or not, you know, I can't do anything about that. So I would say a good 20%.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's funny.
And it's easy to fix. It's you just say to your tax preparer, how much should I change my withholdings to next year? Or what should my quarterlies be? Right?
Why do the quarterlies operate on strange months? Because it's middle of January, middle of April, then middle of September. June. What'd I say?
No.
June.
Every quarter.
It's not every quarter. So it's like every month I'm thinking about, is this the month I'm supposed to pay my... See, and I even got it wrong. It's June.
And yeah, you know, I have no idea. I can't answer that one for you.
It's just another one of the quirks that there's all these crazy tax laws.
So, Chris,
yes.
I had another question. So if I was meeting with you for the first time, and we get this all the time, what are the simplest things I can do to reduce my tax burden?
Well, of course, it depends on who you are and your personal situation. But, you know, one of the first things I look at, are they maximizing their retirement plan contributions, whether it's 401k or can they make a deductible IRA contribution? To me, that's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see most of your clients maximizing their retirement plans or not really?
I wish I could say yes.
Yeah, us too.
Yeah. I mean, especially when the employer's matching. I mean, at least put in, you know, the 3%.
It's free money. It's free money when they match.
It is true.
What's the second thing? Is it mortgage or?
There's just not much anymore, is there?
You know, for the typical middle-income taxpayer, W-2 wages, a home, couple kids, there's not a lot out there.
There isn't, is there?
There is not.
So, you know, it was all the rage years ago, these low-income housing tax credits. Are those still around? Do you still see those?
I haven't seen those at all.
I haven't seen them in years.
No. No, and that doesn't usually apply to...
The average person.
The average person, right.
And has... You know, it's like we keep hearing about tax reform for the last, I don't know, forever, right? But has there been any, like, major surprises the last couple years in taxes, things that caught, like, the CPA community off guard? Or?
Well, I think there have been some good things and some bad things. One, a good thing that I was pretty pleased with that they finally did last year was for the being able to make an IRA, contribute your required minimum distribution from your IRA directly to a charity.
Yep.
And therefore, you don't have to take it in income.
Yep. Yep. And that was permanent for the first time, right? Because
permanent.
Didn't the year before they did that like on the late in December or something crazy?
December 17th.
Yeah. Yeah. Two weeks.
That was a lot of
Christmas
help, right?
What was a couple other things?
And that's really worked out good for, particularly for higher income retirees, right? That don't need the money.
You have to be 70 and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the required minimum distribution goes right to the charity, and you don't pay taxes on it. So it's as if you didn't take the distribution at all.
And it's helpful for those that have issues with losing their standard deductions or their itemized deductions, their exemptions, some of those things, right?
Right. Which leads to the next one, which is raising the limit for the deductibility of medical expenses. They raised that to 10%. It was already high, I think, at 7.5%. You know, it's phased out, or I mean, it's limited. And then they just raised that limit and exclude a lot more people from being able to.
Yeah, that was a bad one. When you consider how all of our health insurance costs have gone through the roof the last 5-10 years. And then at the same time, they say, we're going to.
For your out of pocket, we're going to make it even harder.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, kind of a whacked you both ways.
But one thing that really surprised me was the amount that the portability and the amount for the estate tax is going so high.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It didn't make any sense to me at all. Did it make any sense to you, Chris?
Well, they had been slowly creeping it up, and then boom, it was going to go right back down unless they did something. So they finally did, which is fantastic, and... You know, we hope it stays that high and they keep indexing it for inflation.
Yeah, crazy.
No, I think a lot of us are watching what's going to happen and
with the next regime.
Oh, goodness. One of the issues that we grapple with a lot, Chris, is with the Roth IRA. And you know, the Roth IRA is based on a promise of Congress that the distributions won't be taxed. How do you advise clients? What's your belief for the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, I don't see that they would take away the Roth or make the distributions taxable. I think that would be very unpopular for them politically, especially with the retiree senior voters, who's a huge sector that votes, so much more so than the younger people.
Yeah.
And really, in the short term, it doesn't help the country fiscally. By doing that, because people are still contributing more than they're withdrawing, so there would not be any increase in current revenue.
Got it. Interesting take.
I'm with you.
So you wouldn't have as much. People would obviously quit contributing to the Roth. So, well, hey, Chris, I appreciate you being with us today. Chris Mapes, she's CPA and partner with Van Erp, Peterson, and Babcock, and you've got offices in Northern California. Your main office is in Roseville?
That's correct.
Roseville, yeah. So Christina Mapes and your website, I imagine. If you Google Van Erp, Peterson, and Babcock, you can find Chris, or on our website, you can also click on here, Hanson McLean, and we'll figure it out, some link to Chris. So, Chris, thanks for being here. We've got to take a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766.
Hey, if you're listening to our show on podcast and you'd like to be a caller into the show, don't hesitate to give us a call.
That's
at 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You got it.
Yeah, we'll take your call. We record sometimes during the week, so we'd love to take your call.
Helping you take the worry out of your retirement. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
All right, Scott Hanson, Pat McLean here with you. Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Thanks for sticking with us. Great program here today.
Yeah. And that was nice having Chris Mapes on the show. And it's not unusual for our advisors at Hanson McLean to work closely with other professionals in that are aligned in terms of our thinking, and that includes CPAs and
attorneys.
Well, not only that, Pat, I think
oftentimes with any good financial planning, oftentimes there needs to be coordination between one's accountants and one's attorneys.
Yeah, you'll make a recommendation and you'll talk to the client, but you want to talk to the other advisors to make sure that everyone's on the same.
And sometimes there's some good ideas that, sometimes a client's trying to do something unique and we're trying to figure out the best solution. And sometimes it works best when you've got a financial advisor, their CPA, and their attorney all sitting there talking same room or a conference call.
Just had a situation where a widow and the estate was of such a size that we were talking about setting up an irrevocable trust. And it was borderline whether that was really needed in irrevocable trust. And I had two very long conversations with the estate planning attorney. And at the end of the day, when we did the projections going into the future, we realized, for the possible benefit that it might add in 10 to 12 years, that it wasn't worth the energy, the effort, and the inconvenience to the client to set up an irrevocable trust. We thought it would be too disruptive.
Well, that's a good attorney, too, because that's how they make their money.
Oh, yeah, correct.
Trust administration.
And so we both had this pro and con argument with each other. Our discussion is, though, what are the pros of doing it? What are the cons doing it? Let's put some numbers behind it, and let's, come to an agreement.
Well, we find so much in financial planning, it's which we do a lot with our clients, it's really trying to figure out, you've got these dollars, what is it you actually want to accomplish in life? And this is not always an easy thing to answer, because most of us still aren't quite sure what we want out of life. I mean, if we're really honest with ourselves, we might have some purpose in some areas, but for a lot of us, it's kind of like, well, I'm not quite sure what I want my next chapter in life to look like.
And
I know these things are valuable to me. My values line up here. These people are important to me, and these things are important to me. But most of us are still having some sort of growth and still, frankly, need to find some clarity when it comes to what we want to accomplish.
And normally when the advisors, your team of advisors, work closely together is through these big life transitions. Death in the family of a spouse or a loved one, retirement, you're up and moving, you're moving homes, you're either downsizing or you're getting rid of a vacation home, and what are the tax ramifications and what are you going to do with the proceeds? And that's when it really works the best, when advisors from multiple disciplines actually get together and work on the same thing.
You know, it's interesting. We have we actually have a lot of people come to us at retirement stage and that could do the management of the money themselves, but they come to us because they want a relationship for a spouse. And not to sound sexist, but oftentimes you look at someone who's, say, 65 today, oftentimes it's still the male that controls the investments and the female that maybe will pay the bills, but that's just pretty common still. We see it the other way as well, but
that isn't as common. And we prefer to get both spouses in,
absolutely,
involved.
So I had in this in the last couple of years, I had this situation where been a client for more than 20 years. Yeah, back to 93 maybe. So worked at Hanson McLean a long time, worked with me a long time. And he was one of these old school kind of couples. She stayed home, raised the kids. He went out and earned the money and took care of the investments. She paid the bills, but he took care of all the investments. And when he'd come in for his meetings, his reviews with us, I'd keep saying, Bill, when are you going to bring Susie in? Obviously, I'm making up the names. Because I think Susie needs to be comfortable with me. And he never did.
Never.
No, he never did. And I need to next time. And frankly, maybe Susie didn't want to come, right?
Maybe.
She might just like,
she might have said no.
But he eventually passed away.
And you encouraged her to come often.
I wanted her to come. I said, the fact is she needs to be comfortable with me, your financial advisor.
You're comfortable with me, Bill. She needs to be comfortable as well.
Because if she's not comfortable, her life, it's going to be hard enough. Odds are you're going to predecease her. It happens about 9 out of 10 marriages. The male goes first. So, look, it's important to have that she's comfortable here. So she comes in with a family member the first time. And obviously the family member is here to help her make some financial decisions. The family member says, well, you know what we need to do? You need to get a rental property.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
And I said, rental property? Why does she need a rental? Well, for the tax deduction, because the tax rate she's at. Now, granted, they had a lot of savings.
Okay.
And their income was relatively high.
Mm-hmm. But she's a widow. Had they owned rental properties previously?
No.
That's the wrong time.
She was fortunate enough to have her kids and grandkids live in the same region to spend time with her. The last thing... So from a financial standpoint, from a purely financial standpoint, I could have said, oh, you know what? That might make sense. Let me run some numbers. I could have put together a nice financial projection. I could have said, here's what we can do. Matter of fact, why don't we buy a whole slew of real estate and we can mortgage them all? I could have built this great and I could have showed her that by the time she died, she would be worth many times more than she's worth today.
Yeah.
And but that was,
think of all the positive interactions she would have had with a property manager.
But the fact is, for her, that wasn't really what she valued. That wasn't what she really needed or wanted. It wasn't really, yes, could she have saved a few bucks on
taxes? Let me guess, was the family member that was recommended, were they quite a bit younger?
Not that much, no.
Really?
No, not that much.
Had they owned rental properties?
I don't know. Also, I remember just thinking, I thought, oh, God. I honestly had my stomach kind of turned, and I thought, oh.
This isn't, yeah.
I remember looking at this woman and thinking, had she come in every year with her husband and totally trusted us.
And got into at least some part of the process.
At least she wouldn't have been nervous about her finances at this stage. It's hard enough going through a transition.
Yeah.
I don't know how to start going off on this. Mainly because we're talking about, just because something makes sense financially doesn't always mean it's the right thing. Here you're talking with someone's attorney about looking at setting up an irrevocable trust.
With some possible benefits in 10 to 12 years. But when you looked at the totality of the situation and how that would have required an extra tax return every year and different qualifiers, were like, this isn't really what this... And the client had said a number of times, husband died young, 60, cancer, fast. They had done well, business owners. And the totality of the situation was, it was going to be complex enough without having to create this. The estate been $4 million more? Or $3 million, we probably would have done an irrevocable trust, but it was borderline.
I was at a conference a few months back at a fancy hotel in San Francisco, up on a panel with another financial advisor. And the other financial advisor, his typical client had about $50 million with him.
Okay.
Hanson McLean, we tend to work with more everyday people. Good savers, you know, we have hundreds of clients with more than millions, but
we have 4,000 clients. My guess is this guy didn't have 4,000 clients.
No, he didn't have 4,000. But we talked after. It was actually before we were talking. He says the typical client has 30 different holdings. They do a lot of private equity, a lot of limited partnerships. And I sat back and I thought, oh my gosh, I can only imagine how complicated you've made these people's financial lives. Now, these people for by and large, made their money through businesses.
Most of the time.
Right? You sell a business. That's most people's wealth created through career. They have a transaction. They have this cash. And I bet if you actually sat and talked with these people, what's your most important thing? Is it at this point in your life, is it time? Is it personal freedom?
Simplicity?
Is it, right? And I would bet for the majority, they would value those things over, I want to do everything in my power to make sure I die with as much money possible.
Many would not say that.
Most would not say that. Most would say, you mean I could take instead of dying with $120 million, I'll die with $110 million, but I don't have to do all these, I don't have to have my tax return being as high as Donald Trump.
Or just, I had a conversation with a client this week, and they own a vacation home in Arizona, and they're actually in a golf course, kind of a Del Webb, and they live in Northern California. They're moving to a Del Webb here in Northern California, so they're going to have two kind of a golf course. They've done well for themselves. And I said to them, remember, and they've got properties. And I said, you just got to remember, when your stuff starts owning you and you don't own your stuff, you've got to question whether you should continue to own it. If the utility that it provides in any aspect, be it an investment or a property, when the utility starts to decline is when you question whether it's worth the hassle.
Well, obviously, great advice to give someone, Pat. That's why we've been business partners for so many years.
Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just, I find it interesting to see how complicated people make things. A lot of times when we talk with people's advisors, their current accountants and CPAs, we say, how can we keep life simple for the client while still making sure they've got great returns? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll start taking some calls. If you want to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, our number to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Don't always catch Money Matters on the radio each week. Get a podcast of the show delivered to your device every week. Visit moneymatters.com.
Welcome
back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean, Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
You know the song? What's this song?
U2.
So, you know, this song reminds me, I did, this will be real brief, by the way.
Is this a long life story?
No, it's a short life. I did a tandem skydive a number of years ago. And I had a video done. There's a guy who flies next, jumps, I don't know if he flies, jumped beside us with his camera and took a video of it. And then they had this, there was this song on the back. So when I hear this song, I'm always reminded of my time. But I don't know if you read, Pat, a few weeks back.
Yes.
In Lodi.
Yes.
Northern California. Yeah. Very common place for people to do skydiving jumping. This poor kid, it was his 18, he was 18.
His family came out to watch him.
Did a tandem jump and...
they both died.
Yeah. It's just terrible, absolutely horrible. And anyway,
how many times have you done that?
What, jump from a plane
like that?
I did it when I was 18. I did three different jumps, but that was when your chute opened automatically and you got to fly it, which was kind of cool. And I wasn't very nervous then. But when I had it was I only did it one time. I had younger kids. As a matter of fact, I went up and the pastor of my church went with me, and my wife's like, "Oh, great, my husband. I'm going to lose my husband and my pastor the same day." But we both obviously survived.
I'm going to update my key man insurance policy.
But I was terrified.
Oh, there's not a way in the world. You could not even.
My adrenaline was so through the roof. I went home and I sat on the couch and stared at the wall for 4 hours afterwards. I was wasted.
I can't. There's.
But it had to. We actually had to do the reserve shoot on my day too. But that's another story entirely. So I don't know why I'm talking about that. Because that song reminded me.
But if you'd like to join the show. Oh, a reminder. Podcast. If you go to where you get your podcast and you type in Hanson McLean, you too can get a weekly podcast of our show, and you can enjoy this show at your leisure. When you're out mowing the lawn, when you're working, let's say you're at your desk, and you're like, oh.
You're working. This when the boss isn't
drudgery.
Around.
Actually, I was with a friend over the weekend, owns a small company, and I asked him how many people worked at his firm. He told me 50%. I thought that was terrible.
He didn't say that in front of his employees.
He did not.
About half.
About
how many people at your company work?
About half.
And hopefully they're listening to our podcast the other half of the time.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's take a call here. 1-888-2-HANSEN. Let's talk to John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Gentlemen, hello.
Hello, John. Thanks for joining us.
I've been retired for a couple of years, and I have a California state pension. I have Social Security, and which is taxable at about 85%. Anyway, I want to build up about a $50,000 emergency fund. Oh, yeah, I have no debt.
Okay.
Except to the Grim Reaper.
Okay.
And anyway, I've got about $20,000 now. So I'm looking for, well, I have the money. I'm building it up with Social Security, the emergency money. And
what kind of an emergency might come up that this would be used for?
Oh, that's, you know, I don't know, surgery.
Yeah, you just feel more comfortable having a little more cash. And do you have money in a 401k or that sort of thing?
Yeah.
How much?
Oh, about 400,000.
Okay.
And how old are you?
68.
Are you taking distributions from your 401k yet?
No, I thought wait till 70 and a half, right?
Yeah. Are you married?
No.
And you're living on your monthly pension without these distributions comfortably?
Well, so far.
Okay. And tell me why you want to get this emergency fund.
I guess so I don't have to sell mutual funds at a loss.
Okay. So this leads to the next question: is how is your?
Because a lot of people view emergency fund to have it in the event. It's oftentimes when someone's working, they'll have an emergency fund in the event that something happens, they can no longer work. They need the income to keep coming in. But if you have a pension, Social Security is probably replacing what your income was before.
So how is your 401k?
But there's nothing wrong with it, though, John. I mean,
so how is the money in your 401k or is it an IRA? The 400 grand.
It's IRA now.
Okay, and how is that allocated?
Well, I'm probably, I think I've got a target now. I'm comfortable with about 60% in equity. I've got too much in, and they're all funds. They're not, I've got a target fund, but I'm comfortable with about 60% in equity, but I've got too much in international.
Oh, God. So how much of this $400,000 is in the target date fund? All of it?
Yeah. I'm taking it out.
Oh, you are? So
I don't want it. With bonds the way they are and everything, I just think it's not to be in it, good to be in it. Well, the target dates, you know, I picked the target date that would serve me with 60%.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah, 2035.
And sometimes those were great, but on this large of account, you can probably customize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think what Pat's thoughts are is
I wouldn't, quite frankly, I'd build a portfolio that was, if you're comfortable with 60% equities, and you obviously have years and years of experience investing because these dollars didn't occur overnight, I'm okay with that 60% equity position. I would actually hold the rest in short-term bonds, cash. But I wouldn't worry so much about the liquid account. The problem I have with it now is because it's all in a target date fund, that you going in and taking $40,000 out,
you're forced to sell equity.
You're forced to sell equities, but not really, because what you could do is take the $40,000 out and then sell the target date fund and move it from a 2035 to a 2040 and actually still keep the 60-40.
Theoretically, yes.
Theoretically. Yeah. You could do the math. It wouldn't be that difficult. I appreciate the fact that you want the liquidity, but you have no need for an emergency fund. You've got an emergency. You have a $400,000 emergency fund.
You're going to have to, in 2 years from now, you're going to have to be forced to take in some distribution.
Right.
Of approximately $12,000.
The first year.
$14,000 the first year. So in this situation, I'd actually peel back that target date fund and buy some low cost there. And I would even keep, you know, a little bit of it in, if you wanted to keep it in cash or close to cash, you could do that inside the IRA and not worry about the.
Well, but it's going to eventually. What I was thinking was, I don't know, maybe this is, see what you guys think. I was thinking that like a municipal bond, because I have, I don't know, about 25% federal marginal and 6% state, and like I said, the Social Security is taxed. So I thought, well, maybe I should put in a California short-term limited.
Yeah, that, there would be nothing wrong with that. It, the challenge is in the yields today are so low.
Yeah.
And your tax bracket isn't really high enough to justify. It wouldn't give you
close there,
but it wouldn't give you significantly different returns.
I wouldn't feel comfortable having 100% of my emergency reserves in California munis, though, either.
Yeah, yeah, that well, right. Money market, though, I'm making a few pennies a month on.
Yeah, nothing wrong with and as low as CD rates are. If you look online, you can get about a 1.25%. And you might say, well, if it's for emergency reserves, usually you'll lose a little bit of interest, but it's negligible, really.
I mean, yeah, actually, yeah. You can get a money market account, CD, a money market, a bank insured money market account that's yielding 1.1% really? On an online account. Yeah, you go to Synchrony Bank, or am I allowed to say these things on the air?
I don't know.
Yeah, go to Synchrony Bank.
We're not endorsing any of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're FDIC insured, and just go online, and you're gonna. You'd be better off taking those dollars, and actually, if you wanted to, I wouldn't be opposed to this idea at all. Just take another $20,000 out, put it in your IRA, one of these online banks, and you'd be better off doing that. And
of your IRA, having a separate IRA,
earmarked for the emergency.
I think part of
funds.
It, we're looking at ourselves saying, here you're 68 years old, retired, and you're talking about saving money, right? And I get it. That's why you have these dollars.
That's why you have money. You show me someone that doesn't care about money, I'll show you one someone that doesn't have it.
I mean, that's the challenge, right? So you hit, so your whole life you've been focused on saving for tomorrow, right? Saving for the future. And now you're here. It's hard, right? It's a change in mindset.
Right.
And I think that's the, so that's what Pat and I kind of look at each other. It's like, yeah, you can do that.
If you were sitting in my office, if you were sitting in my office, I'd build a portfolio with ETFs, exchange traded funds and mutual funds. And I'd have a 60-40 portfolio. And
if you wanted to have some carve out from it, you just carve out a portion of the
IRA. You just carve out, or if you said, okay, I need 20 grand in the next 3-4 days, we'd look to see in the rebalance of the portfolio to make sure it was consistent with your needs and go from there. But I think what you should do is
enjoy the
not
money.
Worry about it.
No, really.
I think what you should do is not worry about it. And when those required minimum distributions start coming out, spend it. Spend it. Spend the $12,000, $13,000 a year.
I mean, unless you've got, say, some child with a need, that something we haven't learned about here. Other than that, I would agree with Pat. We really don't think that you need to be saving your Social Security for the future.
So I appreciate the call, John.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, glad you called, John. And it is a funny thing, Pat, as we get closer, it's those that have done the best savings oftentimes are those that have a tough time adjusting to being in a season where we're no longer saving.
It's hard.
We're no longer
saving. Change of mindset.
That music means we're out of time. We're here every weekend on this same station, this same time. So tune us in every weekend. You can also get a podcast. Go to moneymatters.com or go to iTunes and search Hanson McClain. This has been Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Hey, if you're listening to our show on podcast and you'd like to be a caller into the show, don't hesitate to give us a call.
That's right.
888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You got it.
Yeah, we'll take your call. We record sometimes during the week, so we'd love to take your call.